This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Andrea Adelson's also involved in the opportunity for you to have free parking. We're delighted to welcome her back to this program. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. I feel like I need to start off with, I got the power. We're in the power hour. Let's go.
Wait a minute. Give me that one more time. Whoa, 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 whoa. No, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
She went CNC on us.
Whoa, wait, whoa.
That's right.
I want to hear that one more time. We're going to give you the total stage here. Let it rip.
All right. Dun, 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 I got the power. How's that? Good? Bad?
Awesome. Right. I liked it.
It's making the show. I'm telling you, it's going to make the show.
Hey, and let me tell you, assuming they find enough material for a best of Packer and Durham, if that doesn't make the cut, man,
we've really
screwed up. We've really screwed it up. We have botched it.
Andrea, I want to start here. You've covered Florida State and written at length about a lot of elements in that program in the last 5 years, okay? A lot of elements. Coaching, leadership, culture, players, all those things. Man, Saturday night had to be just like the gut punch of all gut punches for them, right?
No question, Wes. It's the first time they've ever lost to an FCS team. And we all thought Florida State had hit rock bottom at some point over the last few seasons. But boy, what happened on that final play was just unbelievable and yet totally believable for where this program is right now. This is a program and a team that has found ways to lose games over the course of the last 3 to 4 seasons. They have losing records the last 3 seasons, right? So if you're going to be harsh about it, it's a losing program. They haven't been able to win consistently. And so when the game was on the line, they found a way to lose. And I've got to give Florida State's coaches credit for being honest about the situation. They've taken a ton of criticism for the alignment they were in on that final play defensively. They've owned it. They've taken responsibility. They probably would have done something different in hindsight. But they also said that their players weren't really ready for that moment. And when I hear that, my question is, but they're at Florida State and it's an FCS team. How are you not ready for the moment? How do you freeze in a moment like that? Those are hard questions that they have to find answers to, because we just started the season, guys, and now they have a tough road game at Wake Forest, a place that hasn't really been too friendly to Florida State. They've got the bulk of the ACC season left with some really hard games left. They can't beat Jacksonville State at home. What is this going to mean for the rest of the season?
Andrea, Mike Norvell was, I thought, pretty animated and hot and emotional. Normally he's very, you know, even keeled, as you well know, being around him. And we watched the press conference cuts and so forth, and you can tell that one hurt. I mean, that hurt anybody that's associated with Florida State. With that said, and given the, you know, the great effort against Notre Dame, the total out the lunch end to Jacksonville State, what's at stake here this week going to Winston-Salem? What do you think you'll see from Florida State on Saturday?
Well, I think we have to see a much more focused, disciplined, committed team, because that is what Mike Norvell has been preaching now since the end of that game, that they're going to go back to work and they're going to fix it and it's going to get fixed. All right, well, we're going to see on Saturday whether it's going to get fixed. And that is a line that we've heard from Florida State coaches now for years. We have seen the penalties. We have seen the missed assignments. We have seen an offense that has struggled to make explosive plays, get separation in the passing game, protect on the offensive line. These aren't new issues, guys. I mean, this is what we have come to expect out of Florida State, and Mike Norvell knows this, and yet they haven't been able to get it fixed. And now is a crucial week, because they vowed once again, okay, we're going to be better. We're going to get it all fixed. We're going to get it taken care of. They have to show that against Wake Forest. And the folks that I've talked to who are connected to the program have been trying to preach patience this week. You know, nobody's really ready to get involved in what could happen if they lose more and the stability of the coaching situation, they have to see improvement this week. I think we're going to see it. But every time I think Florida State has turned a corner, like we saw in the opener against Notre Dame, and I was heaping praise on Florida State too. I thought we saw them play with passion and energy and heart for the first time in a really long time. Then whatever we think about Florida State is completely turned on its head the following week. So I think we're going to see a better effort. I think we're going to see a more committed team. But I also know that Wake Forest on the other side sees this as a huge opportunity at home to really make a statement for their season as well. So I expect them to come out and really put together a really strong effort as well.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because we've talked about one area. Pack and I mentioned this yesterday on the show. If Florida State can't calm the penalty situation down, that would be job one for me this week if I'm Mike Norvell, and I'm certainly not, because I know Wake Forest is not going to commit penalties. I mean, that's just like a given staple of Dave Clawson's program. If you got to get one thing right this week in Tallahassee, you better get the penalty thing right, Andrea.
Absolutely. And the penalty thing is something Florida State hasn't been able to get right now. I mean, I think they had two in the first half, and then they go ahead and have nine in the second half, and they just killed drives, killed momentum, allowed Jacksonville State to continue on drives. And that's just something that you can't do. It's fundamentals 101, guys. Don't make mistakes with penalties. Don't kill your own drives. Don't kill your own momentum. Don't allow teams to continue on with drives because you've made penalties. And that's something I know that they have been stressing in practice, not just this week, but under Willie Taggart, under Mike Norvell, and they still can't seem to get it right. And I don't know if it's because players lose focus in games because they are playing some younger guys. I'm not sure what the issue is, but you know what? I don't think Mike Norvell knows what the issue is because I know they've been drilling this. And then when it gets down to it, with a game on a line, mistakes start to happen. And then we see a game like North Carolina last year, fellas, where they come out and they surprise everybody and they're able to win a game like that. So this remains the most confounding team to me in the ACC because I just don't think we know what to expect out of them week to week. And that's just a sign of a team that has no consistency at all. And that consistency has to start on the practice field where you're consistently working every rep, every practice, every time you're in the film room, every meeting, everything that you're doing, it has to be consistent on a day-to-day basis. And clearly that's just not happening at Florida State right now.
All right. There's no doubt there's pressure in Tallahassee. I'm going to keep you in the Sunshine State. A different kind of pressure south, down in Miami. We haven't even gotten to conference play yet, but you know what? Losing to Bama, there's no shame there. That's going to be probably true for everybody in college football, perhaps. But, you know, the App State game was an important game to get the W. That was a sneaky game just because, number one, App State's got a good program. And if there was any hangover effect, it could have been an issue. But the fact that Miami goes on the late drive, kicks the field goal, wins the game, you move on. But now here comes Sparty, kind of a pleasant surprise in the Big Ten. You get a sense with Miami, we kind of need to see a little bit more consistency with Manny Diaz's club, too. I think this is a critical game as they now get ready to jump into the ACC deep end of the pool next week.
No question. And I know it's early in the season, and I know it's a cliche, but this is absolutely a must-win for Miami. I mean, the fans were having a meltdown on Saturday on social media over what was happening against App State. And I started thinking to myself, is there going to be a banner flying over the stadium on Saturday? I certainly hope not. But these Miami fans are riled up right now. They did not appreciate the performance against App State. And even though I don't think anyone expected there to be some sort of like major upset in week one, I do think people expected Miami to play better against Alabama. I certainly did. And they came out of the gate and it was just like they weren't even into the game. And it felt like that again against App State. So for me, I need to see more fire, emotion, heart out of this team and more consistency again. I feel like I'm a broken record here, but Miami on the offensive side of the ball, for me, has been a little bit surprising that they haven't been able to have some explosive plays with De'Aaron King back, with some really good and talented players coming back at receiver. The explosive plays in the passing game continue to be something that are missing. Why is that not happening? And I talked to Rhett Lashley. I talked to De'Aaron King before the season started. They were confident with his second year in the system they were going to be able to get that worked out. We haven't seen it. And on the defensive side of the ball, we've seen some really good moments, and then we've seen some really bad moments. And really, the pass rush that we're so used to seeing from Miami, it hasn't been there. So you're at home. You're against a team that on paper you feel like you should beat. And now you're about to get into the heart of ACC play. If they lose this game, I certainly think we're going to be hearing a lot more from that fan base about where's the direction of the program. This is a game Miami has to win just to calm the waters a little bit, and also to show the progress that they've been able to make under Manny Diaz, that these are games that they know they have to win, and that they do, in fact, win. And so I agree with you. I think this is a crucial game for Miami. I want to see a lot more out of the Hurricanes than we've seen over the last couple of weeks. And if we don't, I think the heat is only going to grow more intense down in South Florida.
All right, the premium for Miami, the premium for Virginia Tech is not just for their respective programs. It's also for the relevance of the league in the national landscape, correct?
Absolutely. Guys, I have covered this league extensively for the last 10 years. You guys have covered it longer than I have. And I have had a harder time remembering a two-week stretch to open the season that has been more disastrous for the ACC. I know there were times in 2010, 2011, there was a national championship contender, and those were hard. But now the expectation level has been raised because of Clemson, because we had high hopes for North Carolina and for Miami. We thought Florida State would show improvement this year. I think we had high hopes for Virginia Tech, and so far they're 2-0. But to open 0-5 in non-conference play against your Power 5 opponents, to lose to a MAC school, to lose to Charlotte, to lose to an FCS opponent, those are things that just can't happen in the ACC when you're trying to prove that you're a conference that is playing at an elite level. That was a tough loss for Clemson, obviously, in the opener. And it can't all just be on Clemson, guys. Other teams in the league have to step up. And so that's why when we look at Virginia Tech playing West Virginia and obviously Miami, Michigan State in a preview of an alliance game, those are hugely important because I think the league has taken a hit to its credibility these first 2 weeks because of what it's done in some of these more marquee national games. And being able to win the games this weekend, especially for Virginia Tech, which is 2-0 and appears to have the arrow pointed up, is going to be really crucial, not just for them, but for people to say, okay, you know, maybe we were wrong about the direction of the ACC in the first couple of weeks. Here are some pretty big wins. It can steady the ship a little bit, especially as we get into ACC play and start to look and see whether there are other contenders for a playoff beyond just Clemson.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of what's happened in the Pac-12, where you've seen UCLA dominate LSU. You've seen Oregon go on the road as a double-digit dog and knock off Ohio State. I'd say it all the time. Those are the games that change the narrative. And the only way you can do it, it's got nothing to do with a spin. It's got nothing to do with a cool website or your social media department or what clothes you wear, what car you drive. It's all about you've got to beat the people where it matters. You know, NC State can't go lay an egg at Mississippi State. You know, Miami's got to show up when they play Alabama. So games this week, there's a couple of them you just mentioned. But, you know, Andrew, I mentioned this to Wes the other day. You know, I think that if you asked every ACC fan base, hey, is your team in a better spot today than you thought they were 3 weeks ago before the season started? I think there's only three fan bases that would say yes to that question. I think Virginia Tech fans would. I think Virginia fans would. And I think Pittsburgh would. Other than that, I think the other 11 would go, we got some work to do.
Virginia is number one on my list, guys. I've been so impressed with the way that they've played. Obviously, Virginia Tech with the win against North Carolina, you know, seeing those two teams and what they've done to start the season has been impressive. And nobody was really talking about Pitt, although I think I might have had them as a sleeper team. They felt like a team to me with Kenny Pickett coming back and some of the players that they had coming back that could make some noise. That was a hugely important win against Tennessee just for the program itself. I know they were favored, but that has tended to be a game that Pitt loses in its past. You know, we kind of expect those types of things. You get high expectations for Pitt, and then they lose a game that they should win. They won. And so I think that does a lot for their confidence. I look at the Coastal Division right now, and I feel like it's completely wide open with those three teams. And then obviously I think North Carolina is going to come back and have a good season, and Miami probably is going to be in the mix there as well. So you're right. And when we started the season, I think that there was a lot more excitement and anticipation for some of the fan bases like Louisville. And I know the fans aren't exactly thrilled with what they've seen for the first 2 weeks. Obviously, North Carolina being a preseason top 10 team. I think Clemson felt good going into the Georgia game, and now they've got some issues that they have to work through and deal with. We could sit here and go down the list. Obviously, a huge blow for BC losing Phil Dracovic. And I appreciated Jeff Hafley's comments yesterday about Dennis Griselle preparing and being the right guy for the job right now because he's put in the work. But that's a huge blow for Boston College. We can sit here and go down the list for every single team. But I'm excited to see how the Coastal Division shakes out with Virginia Tech, Virginia, and Pitt, because I think those three teams have maybe exceeded where we thought they would be when the season started.
All right, real quick, you were kind enough to submit accounting. You know, congratulations on that. Let's roll through this here. We've got Clemson, Virginia Tech, Carolina, Pitt, Virginia, Miami, Wake, BC State, and then we get to the bottom five, which seemingly is always a combination of these, isn't it, Pac?
Yeah, those five.
Louisville, Syracuse, Georgia Tech. You got Florida State 13, Duke 14. What's the hardest part of this for you, Andrea?
Well, the hardest part for me when I do my power rankings is trying to weigh what we have seen with the most recent thing that we've seen, right? Trying to judge who was the opponent, how did they play, how did they look, and how bad was the loss. That's why Florida State is further down mine than I think what you guys had, because that was just a loss that cannot happen for Florida State. Now, is Florida State a better team that would probably beat Duke if they played, or Syracuse? Probably. But the last game that we saw was awful. So I had to put them down at the bottom. Okay. You know, I knocked Duke and Georgia Tech for some of those losses that just, if you're an ACC team, you probably should win those games. And Syracuse is just, guys, I don't know where the offense has gone. And it's hard to watch. That was a winnable game against Rutgers. The defense played outstanding, but to get absolutely no production out of the offense, especially coming off a season when there was no production on offense, I had to knock them for that too. So yeah, you know, it's hard slotting them in sometimes, but I look at the quality opponent, what they should do, and the end result, and then I try to slot them in that way.
All right, I want to end this interview on a positive, upbeat note, and the only way to do that, hit it. Sing us out to break, Andrea.
I've got the power.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
I've got the power.
You're definitely making the show, by the way. The best of, the tribute show, when we go off the air pack, the tribute show.
Yeah.
That's going to be on.
Which will be in about a half an hour.
Yeah, the tribute show starts about 10 o'clock this morning, by the way. We'll be done then.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
31 years ago today, Florida State became an Atlantic Coast Conference member.
They agreed to join the league 31 years ago today. And we talked about this to lead off the show. To me, the focal point needs to go to the late, great Gene Corrigan, who was the commissioner, because folks may not remember this, but that was not a slam dunk yes in this league when the discussion came up whether Florida State should be allowed in. And Gene Corrigan had to do a lot of politicking, and he did, and he got it. And but there were a lot of folks originally that were like, nah, I don't know about Florida State joining. That's not exactly who we are. Well, Gene Corrigan had the foresight to see that football was getting ready to go on a run.
Right.
And you better jump on the bandwagon. And while Clemson was really good and Georgia Tech, of course, won a national championship in 90, and Virginia and Welsh had a great team, and you know, North Carolina had peaks, and so did Maryland, Florida State was getting ready to roll at a different level. a completely different layer of football. And Bobby Bowden was in the midst of one of the most remarkable runs in the history of college football. And all of a sudden, the ACC said, yep, green light, let's join, let's do it.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
And you know this too, some of this was sparked because there were starting to be murmurs in the Southeastern Conference that they were going to expand. The ACC was trying to – the ACC had been in an interesting spot where it looked like the next football contract, in order for it to be what it needed to be, the league was going to have to expand.
Right.
And the hottest independent property in football – and you weren't getting Notre Dame at the time, right? It wasn't going to happen. Notre Dame was Lou Holtz.
And apparently that's still true.
Yeah, it's still true, I guess. But the idea of getting an independent power – Florida State was the biggest independent power in the country. And the reason they were was because you were seeing a team that would literally go anywhere to play anybody. Well, that attitude and that infrastructure and resource set came to the ACC. They went 70-2 in the first 9 years in the league. And when they did that, that landscape changed everything about ACC football.
It did. Everybody had to play catch up. Yeah. Everybody. And it took a while. It took a while. But that goes to the brilliance of Bobby Bowden. And I also want to say again, Gene Corrigan, who understood that the ACC had to position itself from a football perspective, even though basketball was king and always has been for the most part in this league. And there was resistance even amongst the members. And so he really had to roll up his sleeves and convince the power brokers that this makes sense for the conference. And you're going to tap into a Florida market. Right?
Yep.
Which was a whole different universe, too. And, of course, a few years later, the SEC added Arkansas and South Carolina, and hence off to the races we go with expansion. But Florida State joining the conference.
There was also that trickle-down of Penn State going to the Big Ten along those lines, too.
It was a seismic shift of the landscape in college athletics 30-some-odd years ago, and this is the ACC's dive into the deep end of the pool. And I mentioned to you, in the first hour, while Bobby Bowden and football had such a huge influence, one of the first things I remember about Florida State joining the league was actually a basketball story, and that is Florida State's very first ACC conference game was in December of 91, where they went into the Dean E. Smith Center, North Carolina ranked in the top 10 like they always were, and Florida State knocked off North Carolina, and Sam Cassell after the game said, man, they laid back up here in Chapel Hill. This is a wine and cheese crowd. And to this day, folks that don't like North Carolina will always mention, oh, yeah, the wine and cheesers over there. And, I mean, it's just – it's stuck.
Yep.
And, I mean, here we are talking about the brilliance of Bobby Bowden. Here's your name, your word again, brilliance of Bobby Bowden and the influence that Florida State football had on the conference. But, you know, Sam Cassell's line to this day still sticks. And Florida State basketball – you know, they joined the league and they made some noise. But this has been a great business decision for all parties because it was a win-win. It's been great for the ACC and it's been great for Florida State. And that is how a business deal is supposed to work.
Right, and in so many sports, football, yes, basketball, yes, baseball, softball, soccer. I mean, you name it. There's been all golf now all of a sudden. I mean, it's amazing what Bob Goin, who was the athletic director at Florida State, and Gene Corrigan got accomplished. But, again, credit goes back to Corrigan.
Yep.
Understanding the room, knowing who was going to be the toughest nut to crack in terms of a vote. What was the first vote going to be like, and then where did the appeasement have to come in?
Well, not only that, not only the politics within the league, I think his vision of, hey, football is going to be a bigger player than ever before, and it's coming. So we, the ACC, have got to figure out a way, are we good with what we got? Well, we can get better. Mm-hmm. And how do you get better? Well, you add on a huge value. And that was Florida State football of the late 80s, early 90s, and like I said, the rest was history.
Do you think if they don't get Florida State goes to the SEC? I do.
Possibly. I mean, we'll never know. Even though Bobby Bowden was given that opportunity, apparently, and said, nah, I'm going to pass on that opportunity. I'm good where I am. And, of course, there's a lot of SEC folks. Oh, you don't want to – you know, hey, Bobby Bowden in the 80s and 90s, he wasn't worried about playing anybody, anywhere, anytime.
He was playing everybody.
That's right. There was no fear factor.
And rightly so, because that's how they were generating the revenue.
That's right.
I mean, part of the reason they went to play everybody was because they needed to infuse the capital to make their program go.
That's right. And keep in mind, too, television deals were totally different then.
We weren't talking
about the B word. I mean, it's just a different universe 30 years ago. But it is interesting to note when you go back through the history of our league, 31 years ago today was really a critical piece of the puzzle when the ACC and Florida State said, I do.
Yeah. They came in with basketball thunder, too, now.
Cassell, that's what I'm saying. They
Bobby
were good.
Sura,
they were good.
Rodney Dobard. Man. Remember they won the regular season and they lost in the semifinals there in Charlotte? Got beat in the first round.
But it, like I said, it was a win-win proposition. And that's those are the deals you like to see happen.
Yeah.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, from the basement. It's a Wednesday version.
Looking up something here important for the last segment. Last segment's a good one today. You're going to want to be here. Going to want to be here, Pack. That's all I'm telling you. This segment's excellent.
That's good because we got sleeping dogs now. Fuller's been acting up a little bit today. But he's all right. Chester's sound asleep. He's good to go.
Yeah. All right.
Conference cuts.
Here we go. We're going to start in Atlanta in the A. By the way, when we run this cut, notice the striking resemblance between Georgia Tech's offensive coordinator, Dave Patnode, and my gracious co-host here. Here's Coach Pat.
I went from brilliant to gracious, well, just like that, within a half an hour.
Here's the other thing. I want you to also know that the similarities don't just stop in the looks department.
Uh-oh.
Because Dave Patnode and Mark Packer, they operate by the same quarterback logic. You will know nothing.
Jordan played great. I know what we're doing at Q. I'm not telling anybody else what we're doing at Q. Coach Collins knows. The quarterbacks know. We're very fortunate that we have two guys that can play. And for Jordan on Saturday, I thought he went out and handled himself really well. Right? He prepared himself really well. He's always prepared himself well during the weeks. And then we have the whole mantra, right? If you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready.
You stay ready, you don't have to get ready. I like that. And that theory is so spot on, man. I tell you, Dabo wants to know, I tell him nothing. Nothing. You'll find out Saturday. And coach is right. You got two guys you're comfortable with. So no need to tip your hat. Smart.
Speaking of Dabo Swinney, knows that no matter who lines up under center, Jackets present a challenge.
I mean, they're going to do what they do regardless, but there is a little different emphasis and a little different, they both, Yates is he's a good football player, man. Like I said, he's a winner, state champion quarterback, savvy kid, man, tough. And again, very consistent. And, Sims is maybe a little bit better of a runner, a little more explosive in that part of the game, and he's a gunslinger too now. I mean he can rip it. So you just have to prepare for what they do and adjust as we need to. But yeah, it's a little bit of a difference between the two. But I think at the end of the day they're gonna get that ball to that running back. They're gonna formation you. They're gonna tempo you. They're gonna be 11 personnel, a little bit of 10 mixed in there. They're gonna run their quarterback regardless of who's in there, and they're gonna take some shots.
About covers it. That about covers it.
Dabo's like, hey, have you seen my defense? Hey, put in there anybody you want. We're gonna go play you at Saturday at 3:30 kickoff. Be there a while.
Dabo with the glasses. I'm I vote yes on that.
You liking that look?
Yeah, I like that.
A little more cerebral, you think?
No, I just think it's a different change of pace. I also like the Tiger logo on the golf shirt there, too.
You looking for one?
No.
Is that what you're doing?
Not necessarily.
Are you begging for one?
No.
Is that what you want?
No, all good.
I'm just asking.
All good. No, I'm good.
Okay.
Jeff Hafley's next, Boston College. I mean, the Phil Djokovic injury is just
terrible.
It's just a bad deal. You feel for the kid. You feel for the program. But Hafley's fortunate. He's got an experienced backup who's capable of being productive as a starter in Dennis Grossell. Here are his thoughts.
He's a confident guy, and he knows what he's doing, and he puts in the work. And truthfully, he's one of the best leaders on the team, even as the backup quarterback. So when you have that and you're back up and he steps onto the field, guys don't flinch. I mean, and I know right now to the outside world, we'll be the underdog again. We'll be, can they even win this many games? And to our team, that doesn't exist. Our expectation's the same, no matter who's out there. We will press on. Look at us this year. I mean, Marcus Valdez hasn't played in a game. Booz, our best interior guy, hasn't played in a game. Our kicker, starting kicker, one of the best in the ACC, hadn't played in a game. Jalen Gill, one of the most dynamic offensive players in the ACC, hasn't played in a game. Deion Jones, our starting safety from last year, hasn't played in a game. I could go on, and our guys haven't flinched. And we haven't, like, spread the word, feel bad for us, all these injuries. No, let's go play football. We're lucky to do that, and let's go do the best we can.
Dennis Grossell, there are the numbers. You see 11 games in 19, 3 last year, 2 this year.
The more I hear Jeff Hafley speak about football and his team, the more I like the guy. I'm telling you, he just seems to have it. And I'll tell you another reason you know he's a great coach. All you got to do is watch Ohio State play defense these days. That's when you know what a great coach that dude is. BC's got the guy. Yep. I hate the news about Dracovic because I do think with Phil under center, no disrespect to Dennis,
right?
It gives them a different approach, right? You got to deal with BC differently than you do with them now. And Coach, I know he's got to spin it, and I know he believes what he just said, but they are different without Dracovic.
Sure, totally absolutely. Different. Now, here's the question. How much can Frank Cignetti put in the system to have some of the same traits with Grossell that they have with Phil Dracovic? Talent level may be totally different, but how much of the characteristic, how much of the production traits can remain? How much vertical can you get in there? How much other stuff can you then take advantage of if people think, okay, well, Grossell can't do this. Well, what can he do that teams don't know about?
Here's what I think BC can do. I think they can run the ball, right? I mean, we think about Dracovic throwing it for 300 yards every time he touches it.
Well, I think Garwo and Sinkfield and Levy become huge.
I think that's where the balance becomes for BC, and maybe that's the curveball that throw everybody off for a little bit. So we'll see. Again, BC will be an interesting case study. Especially when they play next week, in my opinion, next week when they go and jump on Missouri, which will be a really interesting game. But the news about Dracovic this week would make you sick to your stomach. Really disappointing.
So you're thinking
parties.
That, you know, Dennis Grossell or you, BC, wins Saturday.
I'm confident with BC. To me, I said this before the season started. We circled dates. And I thought the Missouri-BC game would be very similar in terms of the tempo and where your season goes, much like NC State, Mississippi State, much like Pitt, Tennessee, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm still high on BC, but, man, with Dracovic, it's a different animal.
Can I also tell you who else is Dennis Grossell's best friends? That offensive line.
No doubt.
Boy.
And they got one.
Woo! True that. All right, last cut here. Justin Fuente, you know what else he wants on Saturday besides a big Hokie win? Going up there with some ACC pride.
We always understand that we are representing our league, and we want the other members of the league to do well, obviously when they're not playing us. But, you know, it's something we're all conscious of. It's not something that we drive home endlessly with our team. You know, I think – I personally like the playing teams from other conferences. You know, I hope we don't get to a day where we just play conference games. I think that's a unique appeal to playing teams either from across the country or, in this case, in our region that are in a different league. I think that's fun for the fans to see the different matchups. So I hope college football never gets away from it. But there's certainly a level of conference pride that goes with each trip on the road or at home when you're playing somebody from another Power Five.
Said this yesterday, I'll say it again. They need to get rid of the podium. We need to get back to the lunch table, cafeteria table with a sheet of paper, a pen, and eventually some type of ACC Network mug. It's just my opinion. Watching coach at the podium, it's not for me.
The lectern is not your deal.
It's not. I don't know. It just, it's just me, right? I like fun with Fu, and he looks a little too serious behind a podium. I like it when it's more informal at the cafeteria table. But I did like his line about, you know,
pull for everybody in
the league. We root for our league. But not when they're playing us. I like that line. That's spot on right there with Fun with Foo. But we need to get back to that cafeteria table with that blank sheet of paper and one pen, and I'll send
maybe
the
ACC, a bottle of water.
The bottle of water.
Yeah, I got a bottle of water.
A bottle of water, because every now and then you get choked up. And Fun with Foo, that's a big game. Morgantown, Saturday. Can be good.
All right. Real quick before we get to, see, that's
not the same.
It's not the same.
I mean, I know Virginia Tech's trying to, you know, got the big VT up there. I get all that.
Man, look at that thing. It's nice. That VT's nice.
Yeah, I mean, I get, you got to brand your school.
You slap that VT on the hood of a car, man. You'd be somebody.
Put it right there on that pickup truck.
Take it.
You'll see some of those VTs on pickup trucks heading to West Virginia.
You know what else you get in West Virginia?
Beef jerky?
Not, well, maybe. Toll booth workers in the state of West Virginia, when you go up the turnpike, you know what they wear on Fridays? Mountaineer gear.
Oh, they should.
The herd's over there on the western side.
I get that. West Virginia owns that state. Sorry, herd. They own that state.
Come on, man.
What do you mean, come on?
I did the herd.
I know you did the herd, but guess what? West Virginia owns the state.
I got you.
I have family up there in Charleston.
Psst. Got to give the herd some love. There'll be all the Hokie fans when they hit Bluefield and Beckley and start north on the turnpike this weekend. It'll be nothing but WVU all the way to Morgantown.
I'd like to go to that game.
That'd be a good game to go to at Milan Puskar Stadium at Mountaineer
Field. West Virginia's a good time, man.
I'm telling you, the Big 12 people say the hospitality's fabulous.
Yeah. Well, when you're from Lawrence and Topeka and Manhattan and Lubbock, Morgantown be an upgrade,
probably,
right?
What are you getting at, bud?
Huh?
What are you getting at there?
Well, I mean, we going down the list? I mean, you can stop at Austin because Austin's fantastic. And I love Norman.
Yeah.
Fort Worth.
Austin and Norman, though, those will be in the other.
I like Fort Worth.
You'll start comparing.
Those three.
Starkville. And,
where would you rather be this weekend, Waco or Morgantown? Come on.
Morgantown.
Yeah. No doubt. Yeah. Lubbock or Morgantown?
Morgantown.
Right.
Been to Lubbock.
Manhattan, Kansas?
Been to the Buddy Holly statue in Lubbock.
There you go. Manhattan. I like Manhattan, Kansas, by the way. I've been there a couple times. It's actually neat. I'd rather be in Morgantown this weekend.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
How do we put this? You remember opening night, Friday night, Carolina, Virginia Tech, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we said it would be one of the more unbelievable moments, right? So, you know, I mean, it was one of the great moments of the opening weekend of college football.
It really, it christened the fact that college football is back, in my opinion, because you had the crowd, you had the build up, and again, Hokie Nation was awesome. You knew it would be. The game was spectacular to watch.
Right.
And it just sounded and looked like, man, that's what I missed about college football. Haven't seen it, haven't heard it, haven't embraced it like that since 2019.
There you go. So it was almost like the true welcome home, right? It was really like, you want to know what this is going to be. And all of a sudden, Virginia Tech, who's got one of these great entrances and has for nearly two decades with Metallica and Enter Sandman, right? Well, it just so happens that Sean the Butcher, Pack, one of your colleagues.
One of my co-host buddies over there, Sirius. I never met him, but I know he works for Sirius XM.
He does. Ozzy's Boneyard, the Liquid Metal Channel.
My kind of channel.
Yep, your kind of channel.
That's my universe. Yep. That is 3:30 a.m. dog walking music is what it is.
Well, James Hetfield, who is the lead singer of Metallica, was a guest with Sean the Butcher recently on Sirius XM, and the question came up about Enter Sandman in Blacksburg.
Did you know in that moment while you guys were recording songs that were so catchy and enormous that 30 years later, a crowd at a Virginia Tech football game would set off a seismograph? And in case you're listening and don't know what that is, that's what they use to measure earthquakes with. This crowd was screaming so loud. I know you've seen that clip, James.
Oh, it is. I tell you, even just talking about it, I got goosebumps. It was spectacular. Yeah, the VT game, everyone jumping, the military, the crowd, the team, I mean, everybody. And I tell you, it has been an 8-year kind of progression with it, but to be a part of their lives, be a part of their team, and to pump people up with that, there's no way you know, we can sit and try and write something like, oh, we need a song to pump the crowd up, you know,
to trigger seismographs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can try to do that, but it's not going to work. It's just not. So all of these things happen for a reason. It was out of our hands, out of our control. I mean, those fans of Virginia Tech, they're the ones that made that. I mean, they needed that. So they found our song and we got chosen for that. So we're grateful.
It's cool. I love it. I mean, anything about that's cool.
What a nice relationship Metallica and Virginia Tech have.
Spectacular.
I mean, you know, sometimes that can get a little contentious, right? You've been in those worlds. This is a great moment in college football now. And it's become a moment in college football.
Yeah, it becomes appointment viewing when you know the Hokies are on, especially a primetime game of note that, you know what? Hey, if they're going to kick off at 7, I got to make sure the TV's on at 7 or right. 8 or what, because I don't want to miss the entrance. And not everybody's got that. Not everybody has that.
Yep.
But Virginia Tech does, and it's synonymous. I mean, every time matter of fact, when I'm in the Ford F-150 and I hear that song, the very first thing I think of is Lane Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
First thing I think of anytime I hear it. And again, it's spectacular. If you've never been there for a game, please go. Fans are great. Tailgating's great.
Yeah.
People are super nice. Campus is gorgeous, especially we go about another month. Leaves start to change down there in the valley. It is a gorgeous place to go visit.
Yep.
Yeah, great place, man.
Hokies big on the road this weekend at West Virginia. It's a high noon start. We'll talk about that and more tomorrow. Plus, the other crucial ball games in the ACC.
I like this weekend's games because you've got the combination of intriguing non-conference matchups.
Sure.
Really begins Friday night with UCF going to Louisville.
Yep.
And then the games like Miami and Michigan State, critical. Virginia Tech with a chance to justify that top 15 spot going to Morgantown. So not only do you have interesting non-conference games with Coach Fuente just talking about it, but then you've got really critical ACC games. This Virginia-North Carolina game is a monster in the Coastal. What does Florida State do in bouncing back? Can Wake Forest maintain their momentum? Can Clemson figure out their offensive deals? Again, they scored 49 last week.
Right.
Don't cry for them, but man, you know, the level of what we expect from Clemson is beyond anybody else in the league. You know, at what point in time do they get into a rhythm? Because if they do, watch out. The defense is great. And Georgia Tech, what do they do at the quarterback situation and trying to bounce back and coming up by 85? So there's great storylines this week in the ACC.
Thanks to Jalen Mitchell, Tom Luganbill, Andrew Adelson for being a part of the show. Tomorrow, more on the ball games coming up. Remember I told you UCF Louisville kind of starts a series of games?
Friday night games.
Yeah, Friday night games. Next week, Wake at Virginia. On a Friday night.
And if the biggest word in sports, if they both win this weekend, it really ups the stakes next Friday night.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.